JC Corcoran Podcast.
So what? It's romantic. That's the important thing. You know, the only thing I think you have to tell somebody on the first date is if you have severe psychological problems to the point where you're dangerous. It's only polite to point that out. That's why I think on a first date, the man and woman should have a dinner table. They should meet up at a card table. They meet up at a card table, write down all their little emotional problems on little playing cards, take turns being honest, slapping them down. The guy goes first. He goes, hello, my name's Tom. It's nice to meet you. I'm a Scorpio. She goes, hello, my name is Sally. I'm a psycho. All right, my dad used to lock me in the closet when I was six. My dad came out of the closet when I was five. Well, I'm self-centered and obsessed with my physical appearance. I'm from Los Angeles as well. My turn now. Well, I can't have an orgasm unless I'm on top. I can't have an orgasm unless I'm on crack. Well, I have an imaginary friend named Bosco. You know Bosco? All right, look, I'm neurotic. I need to see other people. I'm schizophrenic. I am other people. What a great crowd. Thank you very much.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, June 28th, 2022, 136 days remaining in our American democratic system of government. As we have noted, how you doing, kids? You are at jconline.com. All right, so yesterday, as you know, there was an announcement that the January 6th committee wasn't supposed to meet until after the 4th of July, but no, come back tomorrow because we've got something and it's got to go on display immediately. And it turns out now that it is a gal by the name of Cassidy Hutchinson. She was Mark Meadows' aide. She was an executive in the White House, in the Oval Office all the time. Now, keep in mind, Mark Meadows has refused to comply with the subpoenas by the January 6th committee. She's also the person who revealed that a whole bunch of Republicans, all the usual suspects, you know, Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and, you know, all of them, Louie Gohmert, who, to me, honest to God, there's a lot of characters in both parties. There's a lot of characters where you say to yourself, this might not be the best example of a member of our political organization, but, you know, we got to take everybody who wants to be part of it, so here's Louie. And you could do that. You could do that for both parties because Nancy Pelosi looks like somebody in a situation comedy too. But I'm telling you, Louie Gohmert looks exactly like somebody who should have been on the Andy Griffith Show. He honest to God, looks like the farmer who would cut. You take that suit off of Louie Gohmert, and you put him in some sort of a flannel shirt and a pair of bib overalls, and that son of a bitch is a character on the Andy Griffith Show. He's the guy who comes in yelling and screaming because somebody's tractor accidentally knocked down part of his fence out in the country, and Andy Griffith's got to go out there. Yeah, but Mark Meadows has been claiming executive privilege, and he won't show up, he won't say anything, he won't do anything, and this chick worked for him. Now, this morning, my wife says, what if this is a big egg? You know, just lays a big egg, and it's not any big deal, because I think everybody's anticipating this to be some sort of blockbuster testimony, and I think she's right. If this isn't a big one, I don't know. Then a lot of people, I think, have already sort of checked out for the holiday weekend. I mean, this is only Tuesday, but you know how it goes. You look around and go, where's Bob? Well, he took some vacation days, slapped him up against the long 4th of July holiday. Although, if you were watching Channel 4 this morning, they had the banner across showing the Memorial Day forecast. Honest to God, it's another one of those screenshots I'm putting up later. It doesn't say 4th of July. It says this is Memorial Day weekend. Oh, my God. But, you know, so there's a lot of people who have already checked out on this. And I don't know. Maybe they should have held things back until people got back after the 4th of July, because I'm not sure people's brains are where they need to be to process this today. So it better be good. It better be a really, really big deal. We shall see. Cardinals banging balls off of Big Mac land last night. For God's sakes. You know, it's like it all got unleashed last night at Busch Stadium because, well, the Cardinals, they strike out something like 33 times spread over three games or something? Come on. But it's really cool watching some of these rookies come up and get their first base hit or their first home run or, you know, just to play in the game alone. It's always fun. And you notice that some guy gets his first major league base hit and the players immediately take the ball and, you know, the opposition team takes the ball and really, really treats it well because they all remember what that was like. They all remember what it was like for them, and you want to make sure that that kid, you know, has that moment, you know, preserved. Supreme Court decision comes back, 0-3. First it was guns, then it was Roe v. Wade. Now it's this. The high school coach who just took his team out to the 50-yard line, basically, and started praying, and that's not legal. At least it wasn't until yesterday when the Supreme Court said, yeah, go ahead and do that. Now, what you want to do, though, is you want to keep your eye on that story. You know why? Because at some point, some Muslim kids are going to do that. And then all of a sudden, it's not going to be cool. And local school officials and, like, the local sheriff, they ain't going to like that. I'm telling you, just watch that story. Just keep that story in the back of your head somewhere. And just exactly how did school kids get served floor sealant instead of milk at a summer child care program in Juneau, Alaska? I'm going to repeat that. The kids were served floor sealant instead of milk. And the original excuse they gave isn't much of an excuse. They said, well, the milk and the floor sealant were on the same pallet. So we, you know, easy mistake to make. No, it's not. That's no excuse. 12 students and two adults drank floor sealant. The district, in a statement late Thursday last week, said it now understands that in the spring of 2021, a pallet of floor sealant was mistakenly delivered to a district food commodity warehouse at the same time as four pallets of shelf-stable milk. The warehouse is intended for food items only. The pallet of floor sealant remained untouched in storage with other food products until this week when the district's food service contractor ran short on milk and sent the staff to retrieve shelf-stable milk. On Tuesday, three boxes of floor sealant were picked up from the warehouse by the contractor, with one delivered to the summer program. The others were delivered to two schools and remained unopened. An official said the boxes were marked with a label that said SEAL 341. According to the district statement, a worker with the contractor took the box of floor sealant and poured its contents into cups to be served at breakfast. Shortly after breakfast, students complained of the milk tasting bad and their mouths burning and their throats burning, and it was quickly discovered. Really, was it quickly discovered? No. The staff immediately directed students to stop consuming the substance and removed it. The good news is that a couple of the kids got sick, but nobody ended up, you know, with anything threatening their overall health, and nobody died or anything like that. Floor sealant! Yep, better life through chemistry. You never feel more like a man in your own house than when your wife and your 12-year-old daughter are cowering in the corner of your home because in the bathroom, on the ceiling, is a giant cockroach. I mean, they're screaming. I'm screaming on the inside, by the way. But you have to act manly. So I get the broom, and I'm looking at the thing, and I'm like, I'm not really sure that's a cockroach, but it was big. I mean, it was the size of a Prius, okay? And it's on the ceiling of the bathroom. So now I come in there with the broom. They're cowering on the other side of the door, and I smash the broom up against this thing, and all it does is knock him off the ceiling, and now he's running around the bathroom floor. Man, those son of a bitches are fast. Man, are they fast. And this guy's running around all over the place. And now I lose him. Worst possible thing. He starts, I don't know, maybe it was instinct. He starts running for the door to the go outside. And he just hauls ass outside. Now he's running around outside on our deck. I follow him out there. He disappears into some plastic shrubbery that we have. It's just for effect on some inside panels of a screened-in porch. And we have some of those, it's like fake ivy that you put up. You know, he's in there, so I'm smacking in there. And now he runs again to the door to go outside from the screened-in porch. He wants to get out there. I'm like, good, fine, you go ahead, you go out there. So now I get a good look at him, and it's a very large beetle. And finally just chased him outside, and that was the end of that. You come walking back in, you know, and your daughter and your wife are looking at you like, nah, I guess we'll keep you around a little longer. You're the man of the house. But it is interesting how anything that's doing something bad and that we eventually catch or kill is a him. Look at him up there on the ceiling. Look at him go. That's it. We got him. You would never hear anybody say we got her. Look at her up there. She's running like crazy. Look at her. Go get her. I killed her. It is always a him. At the same time, anything we sort of like, especially things that go really, really fast, are all women. Look at her go. She's humming awful pretty, ain't she? Look at her. Look at her. Give her some gas. Let's see what she can do. You never noticed that before, did you? That's why you need me around. My family needs me around to kill bugs. You need me around to point out completely useless observations. You thought you were safe on an Amtrak train, huh? Found out otherwise yesterday. But the thing about it is, it's not Amtrak's fault. There's a dump truck sitting on the tracks. Why would there be a dump truck sitting on the tracks? And it's one of those things in rural, what was it, Medford or Medvin or Michael Medved, Missouri? It's like sort of between Columbia and Kirksville. And this train is going from Los Angeles to Chicago. So you figure the people who are on the train are from major metropolitan areas in all likelihood. Why they aren't flying, maybe they have a fear of flying. Maybe they said, like I have wanted to do for a long time, take a cross-country trip on the train. We really enjoyed that trip. The U-Man and I went on an Amtrak train from New York to Boston when we were doing that thing, Yanks and Beans, when the Cardinals played at Yankee Stadium and then at Fenway, and we were broadcasting from the road with the team. And you go through like these little rural areas in New England, and you're on the train, you're looking out, the train was nice. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I've heard about this. I know there's a train that goes from St. Louis to Chicago. You got to get the right one, though, because one, you just look at the route, and you're like, oh, I've heard about this, about how nice it is. My brother-in-law has done it a couple of times, back and forth from St. Louis to Chicago. And he loves it, but he's very, very quick to point out you got to get the right one because one is a shitty train and the other one is a really, really nice train with a like one of these cars that's got a dome and the food is fairly decent and it's clean and everything like that. And then the other train is the Shithole Express, and I don't know how you tell the difference between the two. But the point I'm trying to make here, and don't kid yourself, there is a point in this story, is that you have people from Los Angeles and Chicago, fairly, you know, I mean, we're talking about urban people here, and now the train has a collision with a dump truck in the middle of northern Missouri. That's got to be pleasant. Like the scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. See some guy coming with a trunk full of shower curtain rings. And maybe people were taking the train because of the horror stories that have been permeating the airwaves for the last couple of weeks about how incompetent the FAA seems to be, and you're having hundreds and hundreds, and in some cases, you know, holiday weekends, thousands of flights being canceled. And people are stuck at the airport going, I don't understand. They're like, we don't have any pilots. And it's to the point now where I think they might be doing this on purpose because it's like, look, you know, we need more money to do this and all. Well, what we'll do is we'll just look for a couple of big holiday weekends and we'll strand hundreds of thousands of people in airports And that will get us a lot of extra attention, and somebody will finally do something. We'll get the money we need to hire new pilots and, you know, whatever else the FAA wants. And again, depending on what side you're on here, it's either the FAA's fault or the airline's fault. More and more fingers seem to be pointed towards the FAA. So then you take the train, and the, you know, the train crashes into a dump truck in northern Missouri in the middle of summer where it's like, you know, 100 degrees. Although yesterday wasn't so bad. And maybe they decided to take the train because they didn't like all the cancellations at the airports. And maybe they just figured, hey, the train ticket's not cheap, but look at the price of gas, and maybe you just figure it out. You say, no, this is actually not a bad deal, so let's take the train. And the thing about it is gasoline prices are dropping, but the government, very, very quick to point out, if there is any sort of interruption whatsoever, anything, those prices are going to go right back up again, like a hurricane. And the hurricane season has just begun. And in fact, I saw Dave Murray posted something yesterday that there's something sort of brewing in the Caribbean right now. Pretty soon people are just going to start walking or running like Forrest Gump because they've got everything screwed up. You're not going to take the bus. Jesus, God, don't take the bus. You're better off staying where you are rather than taking a bus. Especially from Los Angeles to Chicago. So you're, okay, I'll fly. No, you won't fly because there's all these cancellations. I don't dig the idea of sleeping on the floor of the airport. So let's drive. No, you can't do that either because the gasoline prices are too high. Okay, let's take the train. The next thing you know, you're walking through a field in northern Missouri just happy to be alive. I know that a lot of people are jumping up and down telling you how great this Elvis Presley movie is. And as I said, I only gave it 3 out of 5. I think it's like a lot of movies that I see. There's a lot of really good scenes. This kid who plays Elvis is really, really a phenom. But overall, it's too fucking long. It's 2 hours and 39 minutes, and it feels like it. And while there are good and memorable scenes in the movie, that's not what makes a good movie. A good movie means the whole movie is good, and the whole movie is not good. And in fact, I think one of the weakest parts of the movie is Tom Hanks' character. And it's just annoying because he puts on this accent, and I found it to be, you know, distracting and actually sort of grating. Well, the Elvis movie made $30 million. I don't think that's what they were hoping for. I think the industry, the motion picture industry and the studios all thought it was going to do a lot better than that. It's still up against Top Gun, so it basically tied with Top Gun over the weekend. But 30 mil is not what they were anticipating. They thought that movie was going to do a lot more, maybe double. If you're driven berserk like I am, because you have to have 10 different chargers depending on how many different kinds of electronic pieces of equipment you use, in Europe, they're passing laws to standardize the chargers. And apparently it's a small group of Democratic congressmen in this country who are saying, you know, this is a damn good idea. This business of, you know, having to buy all these different chargers is bullshit. And so we're going to pass a law that the chargers have to be standardized. As much as I like Apple, and everything I have is Apple in this house. I've got my iPad right here. I got 2 Apple laptops. I got an Apple desktop. I have some other Apple devices, obviously all iPhones in this house. So I'm a really, really good customer of Apple, but it doesn't mean that they still aren't capable of pissing you off. And one of my favorite stories of the day, I was unaware that people do this, but apparently the government has high-powered telescopes aimed at the moon sort of all the time. I don't know why, but they do. And it's those ones that can see, you know, everything, any little change, because I think maybe there's been a lot of talk about, have there been earthquakes on the moon and stuff like that. And a couple of days ago, somebody says, hey, Bob, come look at this. A crashed rocket on the moon. A new crashed rocket on the moon. Unfortunately, no country has claimed it. And, you know, obviously, all the big governments know everybody else's business. they're familiar with their space programs, you know, what they can do, what they can't do. If somebody's launching something, they're aware of it because the satellites go over and you see somebody launching something, but they can't put the two pieces together. They can't seem to understand how something crashed when nobody was aware of anybody even launching anything towards the moon. Sorry, my theremin is in the shop. Okay, 1997 on this date, I was in Los Angeles interviewing Jodie Foster. And by the way, she is a little thing. She's very pretty and very nice, and we can tell really, really smart. At any given point, she's only using about 3% of her brain to engage in conversation with some goof from Missouri. But the movie was Contact, and got a chance to interview Matthew McConaughey, too. I've interviewed him like 3 times. He's a really fun guy. He's just full of the devil. And, you know, in person, he is exactly the way he is regarding his public persona. This is the same guy. No change whatsoever. Also, on this date, 1991, The Naked Gun 2.5 was released. Leslie Nielsen, one of the, just favorite people I've ever had a chance to interview. And another guy just full of the devil and a lot of fun and just an inherently nice guy, nicest person. And just having the time of his life with those Naked Gun movies. Which brings us to 1998. All right, so I go on vacation. This is, we were doing the show at, let's say, 98, so that would have been KLOU. So we were at KLOU, and that was me and Karen Kelly and, well, Mark Close for a time, and the sports monster himself, Steve Schlanger. Now, Schlanger on the show was sort of like having a teenager in your house. We were proud of the job that he was doing, and a very, very young guy in the broadcast industry, and at the same time would say and do things that would drive you insane. We used to occasionally have his mother on the show, and his mother was like, he's sneaky. He's sneaky. This is his own mother. All right. So anyhow, I go on vacation, and when we were on vacation, the kids did the show, and as I used to call them, and I come back, and I find out that Schlanger is trashing me on the show, referring to me as the old man. And Schlanger, I think at the time, was about 23. I was still, I was in my late 40s, but to him, I was the old man. And I pretty much had it with him giving me that stuff. I mean, it was all in fun and everything, but at the same time, it was rooted in reality. And so every year at Busch Stadium, they have this thing called the Kudo Game. It's an organization called Kids Under 21. And by all accounts, it's a wonderful organization that focuses all of its efforts on that awkward period in a man or a woman's life when they are sort of going from late teens into early adulthood. And sometimes that could present problems. You got peer pressure, you got drugs and alcohol, you got sexual stuff. And Kudo did a really, really nice job of counseling kids. And every year what they would do is they have a baseball game at Busch Stadium. So it'd be like 2 hours after a Cardinal game, and you would go out there and you'd play baseball. And when I say we, it's like, wait a minute, you're not in Kudo. Well, they would invite people and you'd have like a celebrity game. So I have this idea, and I call up the Kudo people, and I say, here's my idea. And they're like, sure, go ahead, do that. So then I tell Schlanger on the air what we're doing. I say, you're coming down to this Kids Under 21 game, Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock, Busch Stadium, bring a bat. The old man, that would be me, is going to get on the pitcher's mound, and you're going to get in the batter's box, and you are not going to hit a ball out of the infield. Schlanger gets this shit-eating grin on his face, like, oh, man, is this going to be fun? So we go out there. Guy Phillips on the public address system in the background, you'll be able to hear. And to describe the action, two prominent St. Louis sportscasters. Back to 1998 we go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Busch Memorial Stadium. Bob Ramsey and Al Roboski for the showdown of the century, Al. J.C. Corcoran against the upstart, Steve Schlanger.
Well, I really don't think it's much of a contest here because this is a young punk kid. Look at these, whatever you call these baggy shorts that, you know, he had to put a batting glove in the back just so it looked like he had a rear end.
It's weak, I'll tell you that. Corcoran's ready, toes the rubber, rocks and fires the first pitch. Breaking ball just a little bit high.
Oh, come on, ump. Come on, ump. Let's go. Come on, you got to think of this old man out on the mound. It's hot out here, and the old man.
Swing and a miss! Strike one. He threw the deuce in. The knees buckled.
You know what?
Nothing left.
At least Slanger can say, that's what kept me out of the big leagues, the breaking ball. But looking at his intent to swing, it's the fastball, too.
Popped it up. Boy, oh, boy, you pay this kid back to the infield. That'll be a dead ball.
Slanger, I bet you even want that one, huh? Get off your knees. Quit begging, you little punk. You little punk.
Al Roboski, he's not the best in the business for nothing.
He weighs about 16 years old, isn't he?
1-1 pitch. Corcoran's ready. No, he shakes him off. Now he's ready again. Now he shakes him off again. Now he's ready again. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. Strike two.
Well, he can't hit a breaking ball. Now he can't hit a fastball.
That wouldn't be a good golf stance. He's ready. Corcoran rocks and fires for the strikeout. Oh, he dropped one in the dirt for a ball. It's 2-2.
Hey, Slanger's so weak, I bet if he fell down, he'd miss the ground.
The shorts are pretty, however. Pretty in pink. Here's the pitch from Corcoran. Fly ball left field. Would be caught. Dead ball.
You won the bet, though, didn't you, Slanger?
Two balls, two strikes.
Come to think, Steve Slanger. Come to think, this isn't really a very fair because, you know, JC is a Cub fan.
Here's the pitch. Up high, full count.
Perkins had some difficulty.
Notice after that ball up and in, you see a little brown spot starting to form in the rear of those pink shorts.
They're going to call that a ball. One more strike for Slanger. Corcoran's ready. He nods and pitches. Curveball just a little inside. You know, I think there's a wet spot on the front of his shorts as well, Al. Last pitch of the contest.
Last pitch because JC's arm's falling off.
Swing and a miss. Hey, struck him out. JC Corcoran, your thoughts? The control wasn't where you wanted it, but when you did get over the plate, you looked like you were fairly effective.
When I got it over the plate, Slanger wasn't anywhere near it. We had a pop-up to the second baseman and a pop-up if there had been runners on base, it would have been the infield fly rule, okay?
Steve Slanger, Steve Pretty and Pink Slanger, your thoughts today?
Well, Bob, first of all, I have to say normally I don't talk to the media, but I'm making an exception this evening. If we're in any other ballpark, let's say Coors Field in the high altitude of Denver, that one to left field is gone and in the mountains. However, I battled the humidity. I'm just happy to be here. I'm going to take it one day at a time, and the good Lord willing, things will work out.
He had trouble with the humidity and the shower before the game.
Folks, obviously, Don King's running this deal because there will be a rematch from Busch Stadium. Bob Ramsey.
And that, as they say, was that. All right, late night tonight, you've got Steve Carell. I'm with Jimmy Fallon. Kimmel's got guest host Chelsea Handler. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'm with Colbert. James Corden. Vin Diesel and Ed Sheeran. Kesha and Wanda Sykes on with Seth Meyers, and New York City Mayor Eric Adams on The Daily Show. Second season premiere of Only Murders in the Building on Hulu. Tonight, birthdays, Elon Musk, 51, Danielle Brisbois. Now, this was the little girl on All in the Family near the end of the run of that show when they had to bring in new characters after Rob Reiner and Sally Struthers left. She grows up to be a songwriter and, in fact, wrote a big hit for that chick, Nastasha Bedingfield, Unwritten. She wrote that song. She's 53 today. John Cusack, Tough Interview, 56. Mary Stuart Masterson, oh, my gosh, Some Kind of Wonderful, Benny and June, Fried Green Tomatoes, she's 56. John Elway, 62. Kathy Bates, the diabolical star of Misery, 74. And Mel Brooks, 96. Supreme Court overturned Muhammad Ali's draft-dodging conviction for refusing to fight in Vietnam on this date 51 years ago in 1971. It's like George Carlin said, the military said to Muhammad Ali, "We know that you're really, really good at beating people up. We now would like you to kill people." He's like, "Now I'll beat them up, but I don't want to kill them." Wow, all of that 51 years ago. 25 years ago, during their much-anticipated rematch for the heavyweight title, Mike Tyson took a bite out of Evander Holyfield's ear twice. And during an interview, Herschel Walker, who's running for office, Herschel Walker said there are 52 states in the United States of America. The host said, "I'm sorry, you're off by two." And Walker went, "Oh, sorry, 54. with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for June 28th, 2022 is in the can. 136 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. Be here for the next couple of days before we take some time off for the holiday. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran podcast.